With Connecticut's public university scrambling to reopen in 7 weeks. Wow, 7 weeks. Officials are beset with uncertainty. How widespread will the coronavirus be in September? For example, that's a good question. Will Congress authorize more pandemic relief for states by then? And if so, will Governor Ned Lamont and the state legislature share any of it? Well, despite all of these unknowns, higher education officials say there's an even bigger question threatening their economic future. Will students tolerate the socially distanced, online-dominated, yet still expensive college experience amidst COVID-19? That's the question. And if they don't, or won't, maybe that's a better way to put it, maybe if they won't, what does it mean for systems whose finances already were battered by the coronavirus just a few months ago? I mean, a student frustration this fall leads to an exodus from campuses in January. Higher education budgets could be in a world of pain. The tens of millions of dollars refunded to students just this past spring because of the pandemic was just the tip of the disaster. We've seen cuts occurring at UConn, and I think it was on the front page of the Hartford Current just within a week or so ago. And with that subject, we are bringing in our next guest, a former colleague of mine in our State House of Representatives. He's the ranking member of the legislature's Finance Committee. Welcome back to the program, State Representative Chris Davis. Chris, good morning.
Good morning, Gary. Great to be with you.
Same here. Great to have you. So there's a there's a lot to discuss here, because I think there's a lot of people or parents, even not just students of these higher learning, higher education colleges and other facilities that universities and so on and so forth, that feel that they may not actually be getting their money's worth. When you're paying for to be living there, for example, but you're finding out that, you know, dinner's not going to be, your meals are not going to be included, or, and you paid, maybe you have the meal plan, or maybe you can't even be living on campus at all, you know, or maybe you can't even take classes in person. Maybe they have to have a certain, there can only be a certain amount of students in the classroom, so you may have to take that class online. Are you really getting your money's worth when you factor all of that in?
Yeah, I think that's a fundamental question for all of these students and their parents. As you mentioned, as a lot of, you know, parents help pay for college for a lot of kids.
Right.
Is whether or not, you know, this is going to be worth it for them. I think the biggest question for a lot of these young people is going to be, if I go back, am I going to get my money's worth? Do I get to stay on track? Am I capable or willing to do potentially online learning? Because as we all know, not every student transitions well to online learning.
Right. Yep.
Some people need to be in the classroom in order to have an effective learning experience. So, you know, then the question becomes, do they take that kind of gap year like you see over in Europe, where, you know, young people say, okay, we're not going to go to college for a semester or two. We're going to go either work or, you know, go somewhere else, intern or do something, and then, you know, potentially return a year later. And if that's, you know, if we start seeing that in the large scale, which is certainly a possibility, our state universities and our community college are going to be in terrible financial shape.
Yeah, and more often than not, to use your scenario, a lot of times these students don't come back. You know, they take a semester off. Well, what they think will be, what they plan to be a semester off, and then one semester becomes two, and before you know it, they've got a good-paying job somewhere. And they're like, well, you know, it's been a year now since why even bother going back? It's hard to get back into that scholastic routine once you've broken it for a while.
Certainly. And then you layer onto that the factor of out-of-state students and how they help subsidize essentially Connecticut-based students by paying a much more in tuition than in-state students do. And then on top of that, the international students that, you know, pay the full board usually because they don't qualify for any financial aid in most cases, and how they help subsidize the budgets of these universities. And from what I've seen and what I've heard from the University of Connecticut and other universities in the state is that they're looking at maybe 75% or more drop in those international students and a significant drop in out-of-state students simply because of, you know, people being unwilling to travel or go out of state. In some cases from the international places, perhaps they're not able to re-enter the country at this point. You're going to see a significant budget impact to these universities simply because of that, let alone the fact that you might even have Connecticut-based students choosing not to return to campuses this semester.
So who will bear the brunt of this impact of cuts? Will it be students? Will it be faculty? Will it be technology? Where do they begin to cut?
Well, I think you're going to start seeing basically every piece of the university system be impacted by this. You have at least UConn has already instituted 5% pay reductions through furloughs for their non-union employees. Unfortunately, the governor chose not to or was incapable, depending on who you talk to, of preventing the 5.5% increase to union employees that went into effect last week on July 1st. So, you know, you see a big increase in costs for the university due to that, while then cutting in other places in order to make up for it. Attrition among faculty, so perhaps faculty that either leave to go to another university or retire. Not being rehired. So that would be certainly less classes being made available to these students as well. And then not to even mention all of the extracurricular activities that no longer will be available for students, even if they are able to return to campus and be part of the campus life. Some of those critical things of being in a university or a college and being able to take part in some of those groups and activities and sports and rec programs, you know, those things are all going to have to be limited or eliminated going forward, at least for this next semester or two. And it goes back to the question of, you know, does a student want to pay for that type of experience?
Yeah, that really is a golden question. Are we expecting enrollment to be dramatically decreased this next semester?
Well, I know from the reports that are coming out of the universities, they are budgeting for reductions in enrollment, some more than others. I think part of it, you might even see students attempt to return and then decide that, you know, this isn't right for me. But I think the real worry for a lot of these universities is students returning in the fall and then realizing this isn't going to work out for me and not coming back for the January semester. And that could be a really big problem for them, you know, mid-year. You know, a lot of students dropping out during that Christmas break and saying, you know what, it's not worth it for me. Like you said, they might leave and say, oh, I'll come back in the fall when things change, but, you know, ultimately never return. Or quite frankly, I mean, at this point, we're unclear when, you know, the coronavirus issues will be able to be overcome. So, you know, do we foresee an entire year, both semesters being this kind of limited activity for these universities? And that's a real possibility, and it could end up leading to the university experience being completely different in the future, you know, significantly more online classes
in
years to come.
And that's where I wanted to go, because as I'm listening to you, I'm saying, oh, so this isn't just a short-term problem for a semester or even, you know, a year. This sounds like if this continues, the university system can be completely overhauled and completely changed and look nothing like how it is presently.
Sure. I mean, I teach down at the University of Bridgeport this last semester, and, you know, mid-semester we had to kind of transition from being in classroom to being fully online. And from the feedback that I got from some of my students is that they really didn't like that. And then other ones enjoyed doing online learning. And I think it really comes down to the ability of the student to have that type of learning experience. Are they self-motivated? Are they willing to put in the effort of reaching out for help if they need it instead of sitting in the classroom and having those types of lectures? And then, you know, I teach political science. That's something that can be you know, taught in that style, in my belief. But what do you do for, like, chemistry? You know,
well,
where
that
you
need
actual hands-on labs. You know, those types of activities that you really have to be present for, or practical experience in nursing or medical fields or pharmacy or, you know, something like that, that online learning just really doesn't fulfill the type of experience that I think students would expect, but also what is needed in order to properly learn those fields.
All right, so you've kind of answered what was going to be my next question, where some classes kind of lend itself to being able to be accomplished online, while others, and you mentioned chemistry, not exactly so easy. So then let me ask this. I remember when I when I was in college, and I took political science as well, loved the class. One of the things that I really enjoyed about that class, and not just that class, there were other classes I could certainly put in this category, but since you teach political science, I'll use it as the example, is that I loved the social interaction with not only my professor, but also my fellow classmates. Not so much in swaying ideologies one way or the other, but to get other viewpoints and have a fun and spirited and oftentimes lively debate, friendly debate, you know, and that in itself, it's the classroom experience, the social, the socialization of the classroom experience. I mean, we can all pick up a book and read it and quiz ourselves with the questions at the end of the chapter, and take some teacher instruction as well and learn from that. But it's for me, and I can only speak for myself, there's got to be others like me, it's the visuals, it's the experience of the classroom. Would you agree to that, or what's your take?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's very difficult for some to have that kind of lively discussion on an online discussion board.
Exactly.
It's not quite the same as having that back and forth conversation that you would have in person. Now we have, you know, Zoom meetings and the ability to do some online courses in that way and have, you know, live instruction that way. But I know one of the challenges that I faced was that, you know, I had students that had to go back to work because they were home now. I had some students that reached out to me and said that they were now kind of homeless because the only living situation that they had was at the university. And when they returned to home, they didn't have a place to stay. And they were kind of bouncing around and having trouble accessing the internet. You know, other ones where they went out of the country and they were in a completely different time zone. So to do those online courses and have them set at a certain time was very difficult to be able to pull off. And, you know, we only attempted to do that a few times because of that. And, you know, that kind of experience is lost when you do it online, no question about it. And it comes to, you know, does the student believe it's worth it? And to your earlier question, how do we make up for it? I mean, the state university system is subsidized by the people of the state of Connecticut. So, you know, if our universities have dramatic reductions in enrollment and other fees coming in, you could end up seeing the state taxpayer have to make up some of that difference. And we're already seeing that with the massive losses that are happening at the university's medical school in Farmington. And the fear is that, you know, some of those costs are going to be spread to the other universities, and ultimately the taxpayer is going to have to pick up some of those costs if we want to maintain those universities in the future, with the hope that, you know, we'll be able to move on past the coronavirus in a short amount of time.
Yeah, we're speaking with State Representative Chris Davis, who happens to also be, an adjunct professor down there? Do you only teach political science or anything else?
Just political science, right now, just one course a semester due to the, the work in the legislature, and then having to have my full-time job as well. So, I very much enjoy it and look forward to hopefully being on campus again in the fall, but we'll have to see, what ends up happening over these next 7 weeks.
And you live nowhere near Bridgeport. I mean, I know the district. You're over in the Windsor, Granby, area over there.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I mean,
on the other side of the river, even so, in Ellington. So
that's right, Ellington too.
To be on campus, it's quite the drive, but it's an experience that I certainly love. I mean, I was in the PhD program at UConn before I got elected to the legislature, so you know, academia was one route that I was looking to take at that time before my election. So It was a great experience to be able to return to the classroom this past year, and I hope that, with the changes happening at the University of Bridgeport as well, that we're able to keep that going here in the future.
So if you don't mind me asking, I'm going to kind of go off topic a little bit. As a poli-sci professor at the University of Bridgeport, what are the, give us a little taste, we only got about a minute and a half left, give us a little taste of, what this new generation of college students in a political science class, what kind of questions they ask and what their biggest concerns are and what's the flavor of the classroom back when you were, meeting in a classroom?
Yeah, I mean, this past semester was kind of right in the heat of the early primary, so that was a great experience as far as discussion goes and debate goes, like you were mentioning between students and the professor about the Democratic primaries that were happening, and a lot of it comes down to sourcing of information. I saw and heard from the students that a lot of their struggles that they were having was finding out, what is fact, what is fiction.
Talk about that every morning. Yep.
Sources or ones that they can trust or ones that they know about. And in really encouraging them to make sure that they kind of look at both sides of it, because sometimes what they hear in one, news source may not actually be the full picture of whatever the situation is or